Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah.
To a certain degree, I mean, yeah, I guess this is a sort of, these are my views and not necessarily the views of CKP because it's one of those things. I've always sort of thought, yeah, as you say, with TV stuff, generally speaking, you kind of need to put it to one side once it's done. Mm. That's just generally the way that it goes. And I think there's definitely something that could be said for having those things online and available. They can actually increase... I'm sure I read something about Monty Python stopped taking down all of their sort of clips and then they saw their DVD sales spike, essentially. Yeah. Because it keeps you in people's minds and stuff like that. Yeah. So personally, I think, I don't know, if you've done it for TV, then it's sort of not, it's definitely not in the public domain because that's what copyright's for.
Yeah.
But so public domain is the wrong word, but it's definitely out there already. I think that people get very upset if you record them on a live way, rightly so. People get very annoyed being filmed in a live, so I can totally agree with that.
Hello, and welcome to the Ask the Industry podcast, episode 47. I'm Simon Kane, and for those of you new to the show, this is the podcast where I interview the most influential people from the worlds of stand-up, comedy, radio, TV, and today, touring. Ali Wilson is the head of live and touring at CKP Productions. If there's something that you need to know about touring, she pretty much will be able to answer it. We get into how to put a tour together, how to find the right tour manager, what you actually need in terms of putting together a tour, in terms of a team, as well as organisation, and the best way of getting the attention of CKP, what they're looking for, the nights they run, the clubs they run, the acts they represent, what they're looking for, basically all the questions you could possibly imagine wanting to ask them, but never quite finding the right time. I should say that we started this podcast in a restaurant cafe thing and then had to move out of it back to the office, which is why in the first part of it, there is background music, and in the second part of it, there is nothing. So it's perfectly workable. I'm sorry about that. I can't really do much about the background noise. Speaking of tour, I'm going on tour. And if you live in Bath, it would be amazing if you could come down and watch my show. It's called Buddhism and Cats. It is on at the Bath Brewhouse at the Bath Comedy Festival on Sunday the 10th of April 2016 at 3 p.m. It's free to enter, or you can reserve yourself a ticket for £5 on the brownpapertickets.com is the website they're using ticketing, or on my website, which is simonkane.co.uk. I'm not going to bombard you with the other tour dates, but needless to say, I'll be coming to Oxford, Edinburgh, hopefully Cambridge, Brighton, a bunch of places, and I'll let you know as and when they come out rather than letting you know every date in one big go. But if you'd like to find any dates just so you can plan ahead, you can find them all on my website, which is simonkane.co.uk. I think it's /fringe2016 or tour. You should be able to find a link in the show notes for this podcast, so that's fine. If you're loving this show, please do take 20 seconds out of your day, of your life, and please share a link to a podcast to a friend. It would be really helpful. That really helps with downloads. Or if you've already done that and you don't have any more friends to share them with, please leave me a review in iTunes. That really helps with future guests. I think this episode would be really useful for anyone who's looking at putting on a tour or hoping to tour post-Edinburgh or is trying to decide what they want their Edinburgh Fringe targets to be, because we get into a lot of that at the moment. So I hope you get a lot out of this. I certainly did. Without any more delays, this is Ali Wilson.
Yep. So that's starting from the 12th of January. So that's kind of an evolution of our Monday Club shows that have been running once a month for 19 years, as I mentioned. So it's kind of holistically looking after everything to do with that. So that includes sort of programming and setting it up from, you know, finding staff that put the chairs out. But as I say, the Iris is right up into sort of doing national tours with people and the productions. And also the smaller sort of one-off sort of festival shows and things that people do in sort of Leicester and the South Bank Centre and stuff like that.
Cool. And so weekly comedy is quite hard to promote, or it seems notoriously quite hard to promote for people who are starting nights, because first of all, they don't have the reputation, they don't have like the backing and stuff. I mean, is that, do you think that's just because they don't have 19 years of experience behind them, or how confident are you?
I think it is. I think you just have to be very realistic in a sort of, it's not if you build it they will come, and that's just not the case for any events essentially. And you have to be realistic about how long it'll take before, you know, you get sort of decent audience numbers, and as with anything, the show itself is the key. It's quality will always prevail, I think. So yeah, there's that's our mantra. You've got to start from the beginning, make sure that you've got the best quality products, and go from there, really.
Is it mainly for new material for your acts, or are you going to have like an open spot for non-CKP people?
Yeah, I mean, it'll be a mixture of both, really. Obviously, we do have CKP acts that we like to look after, so they'll be doing stuff down there. But it is, yeah, it's going to widen open to lots of people. So yeah, it's going to be a kind of we're very interested to see how it's all going to come through. We've got some interesting people that want to do it. I can't name any names because otherwise they might pull out at the last minute. But yeah, we're sort of really excited.
I'm going to wait a sec just to see if that, just because I'm because the thing is, my level is at your level, and I'm not saying anything, so I'm presuming it's picking up on that. Yeah, it's okay. I can edit my side down, but it's better, I find. If the thing is, I found from this, the less editing I can do on the audio recording, the better it comes out of the
Absolutely,
other end,
of course,
because otherwise you're just distorting stuff just trying to make it work. So you know what, I'm fine. Okay, yeah. So. one sec. Let's go with. So let's talk about the what's it called? Sorry, the Guinea Pig Club.
Guinea Pig Club.
It's fine. It's going to be a constant thing.
Well, hopefully there's not a lot of people in here, so that's kind of why I was thinking actually it's going to be fine. Yeah.
I did an interview with
these two people having coffee. So once that's done, we're probably done.
Do you know Mark Fisher? He's a theatre critic and wrote the Edinburgh Fringe Survival Guide.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, I had him on because I do a book club as well for this kind of thing. And when we were interviewing at the South Bank Centre, there was a group of people here who were harmonising, trying to work out like how to get their voices to harmonise. And so as a result, I had to like lower it, but it sounded But it sounded like he was in a cult the whole time because he was just talking.
Angels, yeah. Okay.
So whatever happens, you're
going to be good.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure. Like, I think we are one of like six people in here, so it can't be that many coffees they're making. I think we're good. Yeah, we'll go for it.
Let's go for it. Okay.
Go.
Well, so you basically. So I want to get to grips with what you do exactly for touring, because I feel like a lot of comedians, especially like there's sort of this DIY mentality going around the circuit a lot, where people sort of want to put together their own tours, they want to go to their own festivals, all that kind of stuff. And I wanted to know exactly what it is a tour. I assume would you class yourself as a tour manager?
Yes, I guess overall. Yeah, that's probably a good way of putting it. Yeah.
And so what would you say is the advantage of having someone like you come on board for a show, and what would you say is maybe sort of I mean, do you work with the act, like as in that you sit down with them and plan it all out, or do you just say, I know where your show will work so I can get you in these venues, or how?
It's a bit of both, and I think that comes down to the way that our company works as a whole. We're very collaborative, especially with our acts. I think that you can I think the benefit of having someone that does this sort of professionally, I guess, as myself, is that, you know, that I have relationships with venues because of the years that I've been doing it, that mean that I will probably get a better deal. I might get a show in a venue that wouldn't have taken them if they were doing them independently, and I think that I can usually push for the best possible deals that you can get, and that's obviously gonna, you know, affect your bottom line. It also means that I've kind of got a whole infrastructure set up for all the other bits and pieces that come along with it, sort of PR and marketing, and I have, you know, preferred suppliers for lots of things that I know will do me good deals and will be reliable. And essentially it means, and this is the important thing, that the act can focus on just doing the show. And again, that comes back to the show is the key. The show is the thing that, a good show is, you know, the thing that will push you forward, not not all the other stuff around. The other stuff around helps, but it's based on having a good show.
Yeah, I think one of the things I've liked about going to Edinburgh the last couple of years is you could do it in any room. It mm-hmm. doesn't matter. Like, the room is irrelevant, ultimately. Yeah. Well, up to a certain point.
Up to a certain point, definitely.
And then, as long as the show is amazing, mm-hmm. it just take you with you, kind of thing.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think that's... So, once you've got the show as excellent as it humanly can be, and, you know, we can advise on that if that's something that people are interested in. We, you know, even if it's coming down to people that we think would work well as a director with you, that sort of thing. Then everything else is just a case of, like, what we call, like, nudging the needle, essentially. It's that extra 10% that might make a difference.
I should just point out, we're in a cafe at the moment.
Yes.
that was very quiet when we sat down.
It was incredibly quiet.
And I think they sort of thought, well, there's only six people in here. We'll make loads of noise.
Absolutely.
Would you like to come on? No, I'm joking. Yeah, that makes sense. And so obviously a good show mm-hmm. is what everyone talks about, but those words are so, I don't want to say not very descriptive. Do you know what I mean? The word good is very subjective.
It is somewhat intangible. It is. The devil's in the detail, isn't it? It always is. I mean, if we all had the perfect formula for making a good show, then that would be absolutely fabulous. I think we have good systems, and we have an eye for... You develop an eye over time for what... Yeah, for as I say, nudging the needle, just trying to make it that tiny bit better every single time. And using the resources that everyone has and your own resources as well as possibly can to market things, yeah.
When you're looking for a show, are you mm-hmm. looking for a show... Because you obviously know your venues yeah. and what they'll book. Because ultimately, not every venue is going to book every show.
No,
because they have,
and it's not appropriate, yeah.
Yeah.
You don't want to send people to places that are not going to yeah. enjoy playing or and they're not going to sell. There's no point in doing that.
Absolutely. Exactly. It's just a waste of everyone's time.
Yeah, it's a waste of everyone's time.
So when you're scouting for shows, are you scouting for shows as a sort of in between the venue and a potential act, or are you looking for, like, shows at first and foremost and then trying to find venues where that will work?
I would say, yeah, it comes down to the show. It also comes because we work almost... We don't work entirely with our own acts, but we definitely have a sort of holistic approach as our agency. So we would always be looking... You know, we do work with some acts that we don't represent, but it's always nice to keep an eye out for someone that might become part of the agency and that the tour might lead to something else, you know, that there's a sort of... There's maybe a bit of a roadmap for them. I've never worked backwards from thinking, oh, the venues would like this sort of thing and I'll go and get that. I think you could definitely work from the audience would like this sort of thing and find a venue for that to play out. I think that's... Because I guess the venue is also a bit of a conduit between the act and the audience anyway. I think that's a way of thinking it, yeah.
Yeah, totally. And at what point in the stage or the life cycle of a show mm-hmm. should a performer think about approaching a company like CKP? Because mm-hmm. obviously we've all got an idea for... Everyone probably listening to this has a good idea for a show.
Sure, yeah.
But obviously you're not going to be interested in all of them. They're not going to work with everything you work with. And also, like, if you just do one show and you go, oh, that went really well, my friends came down, they really liked it, mm-hmm. you know, that's obviously not the best time to come down. But, like, when are you looking to sort of scout for shows, and when's the best time to sort of invite you to come and see it?
Well, there's always, there's not sort of a fixed season when we go out hunting. But obviously, I mean, Edinburgh is always one of those things that lots of people get picked up, and it's just because you're in such a concentrated sort of... set of, you know, creatives and industry. It's kind of just sticking everyone into a mixing bowl together and see what comes out. But other than that, I guess it's year round, really. It's always good if you know, a tip for maybe not just myself at CKP, but as a general thing for industry, it's always nice to show as finished a product as you can. I mean, everything's a work in progress, so if it is a case that you've got one London show but you don't know if you can get everyone down to it, film it on the best camera that you can manage to do it on, and get that to people as well. It's always good to bring the sort of mountain to Muhammad, if that makes sense. So that's definitely a way to sort of turn people's eye.
Yeah, definitely. And so will you, because when I email promoters or when I've had promoters on this show, all of them have said, don't send me a clip more than 5 minutes. I don't have time to watch more than 5 minutes of a new act. If I say, well, not me, but if someone sent you an hour, do you, you know, are you likely to watch the whole thing?
Not as a first. I would probably, I mean, the best thing to do is to send a clip of you doing amazingly well for a bit. For a few minutes. And then, that usually piques the interest to a bit longer. But I think if you're uploading sort of 10 gigabyte files and it's an hour of time without any sort of prompting, I think that's probably not likely to get the first, pass, essentially. And then, I mean, never say never, but it is just that sort of make it easy for people if it's possible.
No, it sounds obvious, but I'm sure you get emails every day going, look at my hour, when can we talk?
Indeed. And it's, but there's lots of ways to approach that. Again, it's sort of, I do like to see people live, so I go out to a lot of London gigs and things like that, but it is invaluable to have pre-recorded bits and pieces because there's only one of me and there's so many nights a week I can go out before I sort of need to have a night in. So anything that can be done to sort of, that brings it in is always great. Always great, yeah.
And when you are talent spotting, when you're looking for new, I mean, how often, because you can only, also in your job, you can only support a certain number of acts, you only have a certain number of hours in a day. Mm-hmm. So how often are you even looking for new acts?
Well, I think that you always keep an eye out. I think it's really important, just even if it's just to keep a sort of a finger on the pulse of what's going on in comedy. I try and get to all of the sort of new act finals and a lot of the sort of semis and things like that. As I say, it's not necessarily me that takes on the sort of agency side of things. That's sort of the agency side of the business. But it's all good, always good for all of us to have a sort of understanding of who's up and coming and what's going on and who's with who.
Yeah, and in terms of like approaching you, should we do it directly or should we, like, as in, is it best to send in like a general, you know, all at CKP email, or do you just go direct to you? I mean, what's your preferred method of not getting spammed, but bearing in mind that these get listened to quite a lot by comedians.
Yes, of course. No, that's very true.
Never email.
No. Email is absolutely grand. I try and watch every single clip that I get sent. I don't necessarily do it straight away. I often binge watch them, like spill it out for a couple of weeks and then watch it all on a Saturday or something like that. So I'd say if you're sort of following something up, give someone at least 10 days to have a little look at it. I know that's just because it does tend to go in a file, go to watch, will watch. I think sort of, I think it's important to sort of personalise it as well. I think nobody particularly responds well to round robins where they've sort of got the wrong sort of company name in it. But it's absolutely fine, I think, to approach us and email us. That's usually the first point of contact for a lot of people, definitely.
Okay. And if you're an unsigned act looking to progress, let's talk about competitions for a sec, because you just sort of mentioned that. I know a lot of my friends, for example, like we're talking sort of the ilk of like 5-6 years in, have sort of decided, let's stop doing these competitions now because it's getting to a stage where we're doing them every year and it's sort of getting into a cycle, or B, we're getting fed up of competing against each other and reeling a bit, like, oh, hi dude, how's it going? Yeah, it's fine. Yeah, glad you got through this time. But you're not really.
Yeah, absolutely. It's more, so with new act competitions, I can totally understand how after a certain point you also don't want to be perceived as a new act after a while. I definitely get that. I think, to be honest, for the industry, it is kind of handy because you get to see, there's a level of pre-selection that you kind of can go and see 12 acts that have kind of, you know, been pre-selected to, you know, ticks and boxes and that sort of thing. So it's kind of handy to sort of be able to see these people in one go. I can understand entirely why after a certain point you go, look, I've done my time here. But it's more, I think, getting on people's radars than it is. It's certainly about more than winning things, I think. I think people can get very sort of disheartened about sort of doing competitions, especially year after year, and not winning things. And it's really not necessarily about that. It's about just kind of being in a place where a sort of industry can see 12 wonderful people all in one go and go, oh, he's interesting, I'll go and see his show, or, you know.
For those of you wondering why it got quiet in this part of the podcast, is because we moved from the CAF to the office and it's there's no one here. So
yeah, and there's no longer background noise, so that's quite nice. Yeah.
So I might add in jazz later.
Yeah, I think that sounds fair.
That was
definitely
very
fair.
Relaxing.
Yeah, it was. Good mood.
I can't remember where we got to. Oh, we're talking about awards.
It's just, and it's interesting just to keep an eye on where comedy's at. I think lots of interesting things come through awards. And it is, yeah, as I say, it's good for people not to get too disheartened by them. I really do. I've spoken to acts as well who sort of feel like you're sort of putting yourself on a, you know, putting yourself out there. But as I say, it's not about winning it. It's just about getting in front of people and you know, they will remember your name and, yeah, kind of like Edinburgh. Sort of
like, yeah. Yeah, I had a discussion with someone the other day because they were, I can't remember who it was, doesn't matter actually, but they were saying, oh, you know, I get down a certain number of people, but I don't have that many people on Twitter or something like that. And I was like, yeah, but they remember your name because they come down. It doesn't matter if they're not following you on that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, that's also the same with all sort of social media thing, that it's not necessarily about numbers, it's about engagement, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's kind of how building a fan base works as well. You know, that is it. Yeah, I guess lots of comics have a small but incredibly loyal fan base. I mean, like, I guess Daniel Kitson is the ultimate version of that.
Yeah.
Or then, you know, you can have mass appeal, but then only have, you know, people sort of occasionally maybe turn up to something, or they'll see your DVD and go, oh, yeah, maybe, sort of thing. There's different ways to approach that, yeah.
So you said that, like, competitions are just about getting on people's radar from your perspective. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I understand that totally. But, I mean, for me, competitions have come this thing where... so like 5 minutes, for example, is what you normally get at every competition.
Yeah.
And that doesn't really work for a lot of acts. Like, I mean, I know Hills, for example, when I spoke to her, Hills Jaeger, she said, you know, if you can't make me laugh in a minute, what's, you know what I mean? You got something wrong. Stuart Lee can make me laugh in a minute, even though he has long jokes.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand her point, but I'm saying that a fight, like, it's like the Gong Show, for example, mm-hmm. isn't set up for everyone, much like...
No, yeah.
Yeah. So do you think it filters a lot of people out who maybe you might not get to see simply because they don't get through?
Yeah, I think that comes up, but then you look at a broad range of things like awards and nights that you go to. You're right, certain awards are not going to have the same people in all the single times. I mean, you do get some people that seem to sweep the board of things, but yeah, you'd go looking in different places for different things, definitely. Yeah, and just because you've not got through one award doesn't mean anything particular to you. Again, you might just have that style that doesn't fit. It is very hard to do a one-minute joke, but then also if you can do a one-minute joke, that's a skill in itself that's quite handy. So, you know, it's different horses for courses. Is that the right word? Yeah.
Yeah, totally. And in terms of awards in relation to touring...
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the time after Edinburgh, you see people, you know, going through the Soho runs or around the country, and all of the posters say, you know, they won this award at Edinburgh, or they've been, you know, doing these new act awards and then quotes and stuff. I mean, do they actually help with, like, selling tickets awards? Because, like, I imagine outside of our bubble of industry, if it says, you know, new comedian act, no, so if it says something specific like new musical comedian act of the year 2015, for example...
Mm-hmm.
If you love musical comedy, that might pull you in. But if it just says new act of the year or something like that,
mm-hmm.
I mean, does it really have a pull?
It's not. It's definitely not a guarantee for anything. it really isn't. It's all part of like creating a war chest. I think all these things individually can help along. You know, having a nice quote from a broadsheet, that sort of thing. You know, and having credits like that. Obviously, a large thing is sort of TV exposure. That's a big, you know, game changer for touring. But all these things individually kind of add up to the more than some of their parts. But yeah, I think it's fair to say that you couldn't sort of. Well, I don't feel you could tour off the back of, say, you know, one win at a competition or anything like that. Although nowadays people do have interesting fan bases. There's things like, you know, YouTube and stuff like that you can kind of create whole sort of audiences off the back of, and sometimes bypass the usual routes of things, essentially.
Mm. Yeah, totally. Like we were saying before, it's about building that fan base and getting them to come down. And I assume that is something you also factor in when you're looking at acts, because if they already have a bit of a fan base on a channel or over some sort of social media outlet.
Yeah, it certainly helps, and then you can use that to the best of your advantage, really. It's definitely definitely helpful. Yeah, more and more online things are really important and a really good medium to connect. It comes back to that engagement thing of you know, sort of creating a relationship with your fan base as well. So, you know, they get to see exclusive content and they feel like they're in a sort of dialogue with you. I think that's I think people like that with their acts and things like that. It's it's kind of like a band, I guess. You know, it's that sort of, you want to be able to interact with them and get a tweet back from them and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, you don't... I think most of my friends who are trying to play around with social media at the moment don't realise the value of what they do sometimes, because you forget that you are a fan of someone else.
Yeah.
And if, for example, I tweeted one of my favourite bands and they replied and said, sure, we'll play that song when you come to see us in February or whatever, I'd be like, I hate the phrase, but fangirl them. I'd be like, oh my God, they actually read my, you know, whatever. And when you reply to people, for example, I mean, I remember at the end of it, one of the people that came to see him in Edinburgh, they drove like an hour to come and see me.
Oh, wow.
I know, and that's, I'm not pretending that's like a regular thing that happens.
That's great. Yeah.
In any way, but they drove like an hour and a half to come see me. And then they saw my show and just went home. And I was like, oh, that's amazing. And so I sort of sent them a message afterwards going, that was really nice. And they flipped out. And I was like, oh my God. But you feel awkward about it. But at the same token, you're a bit like, that's how I'd be as well. You know, you have to sort of, yeah. So, yeah. But I mean, is it worth when you get contacted then for us to say, because I mean, obviously, I would say a lot of performers don't like to toot their own horn in that way. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, we might do it on like a poster where we don't have to see the person that we're, you know, marketing to. But if we're sending you, for example, an email, we go, I've got 200,000 followers on Twitter and I've got 20 million subscribers on whatever. You know what I mean? It feels like we're bragging it. And
well, yeah, I mean, but it can be an interesting, useful resource. And it also, I think you have to be quite bespoke. There is no one size fits all for anything, really. And yeah, you know, if you've got a bajillion Twitter followers, but you don't feel that happy about sort of, you know, promoting yourself, then there's going to have to be other ways that you work around that sort of thing. So yeah, but it's definitely something in the arsenal. As I say, the war chest building up of things that, you know, you can kind of, you know, find your audience and have people follow you around on tour.
And a lot of smaller festivals have started. I don't want to say smaller. Let me rephrase that. A lot of more localized festivals have started up around the country.
Boutique, yes.
Boutique. Yeah, that's better. A lot of boutique festivals have started up around the country.
Yeah.
And a few of my friends have done a few of them, and I'm looking at doing a few of them next year. And most of them have said that they're really good because when you leave London, you go to somewhere smaller, as it were, which is not hard compared to London.
Fair point. Yeah.
Like I can say it that time. You get somewhere else, and they don't get a lot of comedy, and they're really glad that you've even come to see them.
Yeah.
That means you get like a nice audience and they're sort of up for it, and even if they don't like it, they're very respectful and stuff.
Yeah.
Do you think
lovely?
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Do you think this is going to be a good thing in the long term? Because I mean, like, I think the more festivals there are, it's going to be great for festival acts, but do you think it will just start to saturate it a bit? Because if they get used to there being a festival there, it just becomes a thing then, and it stops being that, you know, exciting thing that comedians are coming out for, and then just becomes another festival city, as it were. Or do you think it's a good one?
Well, I don't think that's. I think it's again, it comes back to the devil in the detail, because you know, you can't just put a poster up and book three acts and call it a festival. That doesn't work. But I think that it's quite exciting. I think there's almost like a little mini circuit that's emerging of smaller festivals. And a lot of them kind of make sense because a lot of them essentially work as your preview towards Edinburgh. I mean, that's, you know, not to be too Edinburgh-centric, but that kind of works out quite nicely. You kind of bounce around some of these slightly nicer places and try your jokes outside of London, because a lot of the industry is incredibly London-centric. And yeah, you want to try some jokes and remember not to say Oyster card and that sort of thing, you know. whether it could be oversaturated, I mean, anything could be oversaturated, really, if there's too many of them, and especially if the quality isn't kept up. That's the death of anything, really, if there's not good curation and not good running of everything. But it seems to be interesting the way that sort of people seem to be more happy to come out and see sort of touring shows. Maybe in the last sort of 5 or so years, there's definitely been a lot more people out on tour. And, you know, what you can count as tour, you know, going around the smaller festivals can absolutely be a tour. I think that's quite it's a sort of a nice audience to open up, I think.
When you say that a lot of a lot of the industry is very London-centric, do you think it's got to a state, because it sort of sometimes can feel like, especially when you're sort of trying to push your way up, that a lot of clubs have, should we say, a rotation of acts they sort of put on every so often, and they've got their own acts that they sort of obviously prioritise. I mean, do you think it's possible for an act to get through without management, to get to a stage where they can play the clubs every couple of months or every 6 months or something? Or do you think it's tied up in the fact that you guys have, as you say, kind of not gatekeeper status, but whoever you take on, they're going to trust a lot more than if we were to contact them directly?
Sure. I definitely don't think that it's, especially when it comes to things like sort of live club bookings, I think that that's something that you do try and keep your eyes open wide for. And I would never like to sort of feel like I program just because I sort of know management and things like that. So, because I mean, we do have a system. We have open spots that kind of that come on and progress that way. Which I mean, I do get pretty much everyone to do one of those before they sort of do a weekend show with me. And I think that is still something that I think the existence of sort of open spots and even on weekend shows is kind of important, because that is how people get through the door, and that is the sort of chance for people to sort of, you know, again, it comes down to, are you any good in front of this audience? Yeah. You know, not necessarily who you know or anything like that. And it's sort of I think that's probably the most egalitarian way of doing it, really. Yeah. Are you any good?
Yeah, totally. I think something that I met a very, very new act recently, mm-hmm. and they said, oh, I really want to be able to play every room. And I remember being in that mentality, and I just sort of had a moment where I was like, you do that. Like, you won't be able to play every room. That's just not possible.
No, it is just not possible. No, it isn't. And to almost, to be honest, to try to do that is to dilute what will make you the funniest. I think you're funny because you're you. I think that's what it comes down to. You kind of always want something with a little bit more. You don't just want someone that, you know, will just tell some generic jokes. You want to know why you want to be on this this person's company, essentially.
Yeah, totally.
So to try and dilute yourself to make yourself able to play every single room, I think, is probably counterproductive.
Yeah. No, that's completely my take on it as well. I mean, I remember when I used to be excited about going, oh, I'm going to try and play every room and it's going to be great. But then you're like, you don't need to be able to play every room to be viable as an artist.
No, definitely not. And yeah, I get, it's one of those things. I'm sure that, like, every night in your act, there will be some rooms that you cannot play. You know, there's some. That's it's all part of the course, I think. Yeah.
Jill Edwards put it beautifully, where she said, "Just because you don't get booked by a promoter, doesn't mean that you're not good.
Absolutely.
And just because they didn't book you, they're not a dickhead.
that's a nice thing. Yeah, I'd like to hope that that's true.
That
is absolutely true. Again, it's sort of, I wouldn't go into specifics, but there's people that I really enjoy that I see other places, and sort of, you know, I've put them on open spots and gone, yeah, I can. No, you know, I'm not terrible, but I feel like, you know, that sort of thing. Some people kind of, it's one of the, just because, yeah, you don't get booked doesn't mean you're not good. That's so true. I've seen lots of people do fantastic things in different rooms. And that is the interesting thing, I think, when you tend to go out and watch a lot of comedy, you do realise sometimes how intense the relationship between a sort of audience and room is with that comic, and the difference it really can make, you know, to how people perform, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And in terms of finding the rooms you can play, mm-hmm. how do you assess that for acts? I mean, obviously, I assume when you're picking up an act to represent for live work, mm-hmm. you will have seen them enough that you probably can mouth the words at them, you know what I mean? you obviously know what they're doing, and so you can kind of picture where they might work. But I mean, do you still run with trial and error a bit, where you sort of say, well, I know they're working these five rooms, but I'll also put them forward for this person?
Yeah, there's always, it's balanced risk, isn't it? There's sort of if you always go with safe things, you won't achieve the most you can achieve, but that taking risks means, you know, it is a little bit of trial and error, I guess. But you try and balance that up, so overall it's a safer bet as you can take. Yeah.
Would you tell a booker, mm-hmm. you know, this person, I'm pretty sure they'll work really well in your room, or would you just go, I'll book them? Because obviously it might be worth, transparency wise, for that booker to know ahead of time that you're taking a risk, and that way they might be able to position them on a bill where, you know what I mean, they're between two solid acts, they know work in that room. Or would you just...
Sure. I mean, I don't actually organise the live diaries for the acts, in circuit gigs and things. That's actually by the wonderful Helena, who works in the office. But I think you generally know where you're getting people into. And the truth is, if we take acts on, we're very excited about them. So, and I think that excitement can be enthusiastic. You know, it's infectious, hopefully. And that tends to be the way that we sort of can open doors for them. But I think, again, it's a very small industry, so I do think that a good recommendation from someone else does count for a lot. But it's always, interesting. Have I ever put any on just because of someone's recommendations? No, I think I've always seen someone first. But it definitely does count for something, I think, when somebody with a bit of, you know, with a passion will go, actually, you should put this guy on. He is brilliant. Yeah.
Definitely. So okay, we'll go back to tour managing then, because yes, cool. that's what you do. So how would someone say you've got a show, mm-hmm. and you're really happy with that show, and you've done it in Edinburgh, it's gone well, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
How do you find a good tour manager? Like, what's the starting point? Because obviously you can look at who they've represented before, mm-hmm. but that's not always, should we say, as transparent on a website. I can say, you know, they've done this tour with this company, and you know, for example, your head of life here, yeah. but I don't know who you've represented directly with those kind sure. of things without asking you directly. Mm-hmm. So how would someone find a touring manager that would work for them?
Well, there's lots of, I mean, there's sort of various different companies that do it. And I think, actually, yeah, do ask around. I think everyone that sort of, I hope that people will say nice things about me. Do ask around for recommendations. That's always, you know, word of mouth in an industry is fantastic. But I think there is a sort of element of going, put it out to as many people as you like and see who's interested and then take it from there. Take a view from there is what I'd suggest.
Okay. And once you've got the tour manager, so once you've taken on a show, mm-hmm. for example, in fact, when you take on a show, are you sort of signing up to take a commission of the sales of the tickets or of like just a cut of, how does that work?
Standard tour deal. Yeah. You take a cut of the total profits. Yeah.
Okay.
That's the standard. Yeah.
Yeah. So once you've taken on the show and you've agreed a deal and you're ready to like put them around, what's the next step? Do you start to contact venues or you contact PR? Like, what's the order for things that you would need to do? Because obviously you don't want to book something in too soon and then not have time to get promotion, but you don't want to. Yeah. So.
Yeah. I would say most tours book in about, say, 8 or 9 months in advance, maybe. Okay. I mean, it's quite a big window. It's usually season to season because you want to get in brochures. Brochures make a big difference for each venue. And that's always slightly, you know, that's quite venue dependent. But there's generally sort of seasons that people book in. So, yeah, you'd start contacting them, building a schedule around that sort of thing. When you have that sort of locked in, then you start thinking about sort of obviously print needs and stuff like that, and PR needs, and building things on top of it. But yeah, I think I've always worked with building a tour first and then, yeah, putting things around it.
So in terms of stuff post Edinburgh, mm-hmm. you'd be looking at January, February to have a show locked down. Is that, yeah?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So at the moment, I'm starting to put in stuff for after Edinburgh this year.
Yeah.
So next year, 2016. Yeah.
It's December, by the way.
December 2015 at the moment.
As we're recording this. No, because it's just interesting because a few of my friends, they sort of leave it very last minute to write the show or very last minute to prepare the show. And we all have to have when's the deadline for Edinburgh? I think the deadline for Edinburgh is like end of January or something, isn't it? To have like stuff.
Well, there's lots of different ones. The very very first ones, yeah, at the end of January. I think the very last one is April, but yeah. there's various different cutoff points. Yeah.
Yeah. So is it? And this is going to sound really odd because like the industry is very Edinburgh and London centric. Mm-hmm. So is that deadline because of the way you guys operate? Is it because you guys need to have stuff ready for post Edinburgh, so you're seeing Edinburgh as sort of a starting block, or is it just they need
that's
it that
just
far
their, as far as I'm okay. aware, that's just their deadline. There's not a huge amount of the fringe deadlines are the fringe deadlines. It doesn't feel like they've particularly kind of it's not one of those things. It does sort of, it's one of those things, deadlines make things happen. Wherever you drop them, it makes things happen, I think, you know.
Yeah, they've not taken you into account, essentially. you're working around
them. Well, they have thousands and thousands of shows to organise and oversee, and I can imagine that is like, yeah, turning a tanker, but yeah.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Okay, so how do you view Edinburgh for your act? So I assume each one will have a different target, but you know, like whether you want it to be a springboard for a tour or whether you want it to be some sort of Soho run or whatever, but mm-hmm. when you think of Edinburgh, other than how do you view it?
I think it's always a great opportunity for people. I think there's a lot of things that people can get out of Edinburgh. It's good to go in with, you know, that the slightly Stephen Covey thing of start with the end in mind. It is good to have some ideas of tangible things that you're working towards. And that's the nice thing about working with the sort of agency side as well. So you can kind of set sort of ideas for agencies and things. So, but I think it's a really great opportunity for people to really flex their wings, because it is, you know, even if you're doing a split 20 minutes, that can be a lot longer than you're used to doing on stage. So it really can help you build up your material and give you a chance to find your voice. On the wider scheme of things, obviously there is a lot of industry up there, so that's something that you can target and look to take forward. But I think it's a, yeah, it can be a really great, it could be a real sort of a chrysalis thing of, you know, it can really help stretch you a little bit, I think, as an act. Even if, you know, even if you don't feel it's a tangible thing that comes out of Edinburgh, I genuinely think that Edinburgh tends to kind of make comics sort of step up, essentially. Mm. I think, again, it's that sort of writing an hour of funny material that, you know, you can perform every day with a sort of knowing that this is the best, you know.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is your best stuff. I think that's important.
You say on your website that you also produce shows as well as manage tours.
Mm-hmm.
What is the difference between a producer and a tour manager?
Okay, so the difference between a producer and a tour manager, I guess a tour manager in that particular phrase generally tends to be more day-to-day, tends to look after making sure that everyone gets to the right place at the right time, that every venue is set up as per, and there's riders and things like that, where a producer would, it sort of builds it from the ground up, essentially. And that's kind of the same with, yeah, the difference between, so tour manager specifically tends to be someone that would go out on the road with an act and kind of, you know, act as a second pair of eyes and just kind of get everything done that needs to be done. Whereas, yeah, the producer would probably be a bit more sort of office-based and phone-based and all that sort of stuff.
So you go out on tour with the acts, or...?
I don't personally. Some of the acts do have tour managers that go out with them. I don't drive, so that's a big downside. But generally, for the smaller tours, people don't really need that sort of... you know, day-to-day kind of help with things, but with sort of even with art centres and things like that, they know what they're doing and they're not expecting someone to turn up and sort of re-rig all the lights. It's not going to be a Van Halen concert, you know. Yeah. But obviously with bigger tours, CKP co-promoted with Live Nation for Mickey Flanagan, then that is, you do need someone there to oversee the crews and the, you know, literally putting all the lights in and making sure everything's as it should be. You do need someone to sort of push that through. But I think definitely for smaller tours, I think, you know, as long as everyone knows where they're supposed to be going, you don't need too many people sort of coming with you. Keep it simple.
Yeah, totally. Stuart Lee said that the less people you have with you, the smaller the budget, the more profit you get at the other end, or something like that.
Well, I mean, that's basic maths. Yeah, absolutely. It is. I mean, it seems worth repeating. You know, it's there's that sort of thing with any budget. The sort of, you can have a gold plated Rolls Royce if you pay for it. You know, sort of.
He does have a way with words to make something as simple as mass sound very intelligent like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when so the interesting thing for me about what you said a while ago was, mm-hmm. You're putting in stuff now for after Edinburgh.
Yep.
Now, from an outsider point of view, it looks like if you go to Edinburgh and you win the... I mean, I'm sure, for example, the Soho Theatre keep a slot free for whoever wins the newcomer award.
I think that's slightly different, but yes, they definitely do.
Yeah. So I think it could look a bit like, from the outside, if you don't win an award, you don't get sort of, you know, the plus points of the springboard that Edinburgh can offer.
Mm.
But it sounds like
the reality situation is, as with, for example, X Factor, for example, you know, if you win the thing, you automatically get a record contract, and it happens to be near Christmas, and so you're most likely going to get a number one because of all the backing and the, like you said, the emotional connection people have made with you throughout the weeks and stuff. So it feels like, to a certain degree, yes, if you win an award, you might get some shows out of it at the other end.
Definitely.
But ultimately, you guys are already planning stuff in now for post-Edinburgh, so it's not as...
It's not as cut and dry. I think that people can get very fixated on awards and can lose the sight of why you would go to somewhere like Edinburgh. Like, it, there's no denying that sort of to win, like, say, the big Edinburgh Comedy Award, yeah, I mean, you'll definitely, well, almost certainly get your sort of Soho Theatre run, and there will be some heat around you that you wouldn't have got, but... If you focus too much on winning these things and thinking this is the one thing that's going to be your big break or going to make you, you can take your eye off the show again. Mm. So we come back to that, you know, it can just be about how do I impress these, you know, 10 people that choose this award, not how do I make the best show I can make, you know, because that's only 10 people in a room. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it does. It definitely helps winning an award, that sort of thing. But it's, yeah, I've seen a lot of people sort of, too fixated on it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I can. Same. But the problem is that Edinburgh, it's so. I don't know. I don't like. I'm trying not to talk about it as much in these. But the thing is, it's such a big part of the year.
Yeah.
That you can't really not acknowledge that. You know what I mean? It's like Christmas in marketing.
It's our sort of it's absolutely that. It's I think it's naive not to mention it. Again, sort of all roads seem to be leading back to Edinburgh. Everything that we've sort of said to a certain degree, and obviously we're kind of, you know, I spend a lot of time doing it, and you've been up there, but I still think it is a real integral part of our, you know, the industry. I really do think it is. But yeah, not just because it's. You can't be too short-sighted about it. You can't think you'll go up there and somebody will walk in with a big cigar and go make you a star, and you're going to get, you know, you're going to get a sitcom off the back of it. But, you know, the first year you go up, you're going to get on a couple of people's radar, and the second year up, you might get a bit of buzz, and that might lead to a few meetings with people that then might, you know, it is what's that standard thing? It takes 10 years to make an overnight success. It really is that. It really is that.
Yeah, totally, totally. And so... When you're putting together, let's ask it this way around. For you've probably seen a lot of independent comedians try and put on their own tours and try and push their own things around the country. And you don't have to mention any names, what are the biggest mistakes that you see a non-professional sort of overlooking that you would obviously have maybe some sort of plan in place because you've obviously got your mind ready to go through the process for the 100th time? So,
let me have a think about that. Just trying to think of a list of tall mistakes.
Or maybe things that you've learnt in the last decade that you would say that people would probably overlook just because in their first year, like you in your first year in this job, you probably made mistakes. Everyone does.
Everyone's human.
Yeah.
All these things, and you need to do so as minimise as much as possible. I think it's quality, not quantity. That's always an important thing, I think, with tours, that just because someone is willing to take a tour date doesn't mean that you should just put in every tour date that comes back to you. Some venues do sell better than others, and some venues will sell better for some acts than others. Just because that programmer is trying to fill their, you know, book before the brochure goes out doesn't mean that you should kind of go, they said that we'll take them. That's definitely something that you build and build on. You know, there's no point doing a 75 date tour if it's just splitting your audience 75 ways, essentially.
Yeah, totally.
So that's important. I think, learning to use your own resources as much as you humanly can. Just think of everything that you possibly have to help market you. And that does include social media. That includes any ties that you have to any local areas, that sort of thing. Those can all come into play. It's one of those things that you may as well kind of dig deep. There's no bad ideas when it comes to marketing these sorts of things. I'm sort of like wide open to ideas about that sort of thing.
Do you want to come back to the...
Yeah, that's okay. A comprehensive answer, sorry.
No, it's fine. What we can do is we'll just carry on, and then randomly you can go, I've got something!
Sure. Yeah, that's cool.
And that will mean everyone have to listen to the end. So when you're marketing a show then, stunts, for example, in Edinburgh, I think they're lovely, and they sound really great as long as you hear about them and the right people hear about them. Otherwise, they can be a bit gimmicky at times. And By the way, for the record, she nodded. It wasn't just... that's not just... Oh, sorry, can I not say
yeah,
that?
Yeah, yeah, it's fine. Okay, fine. No, it's fine. It's true.
Well, because I feel like no one else wants to acknowledge that, and it feels very much like it's great, and the Malcolm Hardy ones, for example, you know, the ones they pick mm-hmm. up on, generally are very good stunts, but a lot of them are sort of people going, oh, well, I've got a show about horses. I'll ride a horse through, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. the centre of the town. And... But like you said, no. Are you adamant of like no press? No press is bad press, as it were.
No, I don't think that's true. Yeah. No, there's definitely such thing as a bad press, and that's why you know, hopefully have people that will you know, guide you around that sort of thing. Yeah, I think it definitely. Yeah, I don't think it's a throw enough at the wall and something will stick approach. Definitely not. But I just mean take stock of what you may not realize that you know it may not look like you have loads of Facebook followers, but every time you post something that everyone gets involved in it. You know, or it may not look that, you know, you may think, oh, what's the point of making a website of myself, and then you do it and then you realize that people are actually going there to get your bios, and they notice that you're on at gigs and that sort of thing. So yeah, just take stock, I think, of all avenues. There's no such thing as a bad idea, but doesn't mean that go with the first, that, you know. You do need to finesse it, don't get me wrong.
I always say there's no such thing as a bad idea, but there is such thing as a bad execution.
Oh, yeah, okay. I can see that. Yeah, I can see that. Definitely.
Yeah. okay, right. These are quick fire questions that have been submitted by listeners. Right. You can take as long as you want. They're just quite short questions.
Okay, cool.
Okay. Would you ever blacklist or whitelist a club/venue based on an act's feedback?
Ooh. You'd definitely take it into account. Yeah, I think, well, we're all working together, so it's good to know it's a small venue, small industry, so you can't really screw anyone over, and that's quite nice, I think. So,
yeah,
if word gets out quite quickly.
Mm. In terms of actually just building off that, you know, the Comedy Guild, yeah, the...
So, like, a comedy union thing?
Yeah, I think they've set up a union with... See, this is the thing, I'm sort of trying to keep up with what's happened.
Me too, I'm sort of... Yeah. I probably should be more invested... I should be more up to date with it, but I kind of... Yeah, well, I see things on Chortle.
Yeah. The worst part about that is one of my friends is one of the members of the founding members of it, and they've said to me, do you want to join? And I'm like, yes, I do, but I only know part of it. Can you tell me more about it?
Yeah, in theory, yes. Absolutely. Yeah.
But okay, so as far as I understand it, there's a union, a sub-union within Equity now,
yes,
for comedians.
Yes, yeah.
But there is a Comedy Guild that deal directly with complaints that comedians are specifically having about, you know, for example, junglers not paying, or, you know, like certain promoters badly running nights, mm-hmm. or setting up nights just to profit off comedians and not paying them, or all that kind of stuff that happens. But
stuff that is just not cool. Yeah,
they should have called themselves stuff that's not cool. Yeah. Guild.
Well, it's important that it's important that word of mouth and reputation is really important in any industry, and especially so here. I mean, I guess it works both ways. I'm sure there's, you know, acts that maybe not don't always turn up or things like that. But yeah, I think there's definitely no harm in publicising things like that, and certainly maybe giving people right of reply as well, because you wouldn't want it to become witch hunty.
No, not at all.
So you wouldn't want it to become, you know, let's all say about this person XYZ, but it's definitely worth somewhere to pool thoughts about things. Or nothing ever changes, you know, unless something gets done, nothing ever changes. Yeah.
Yeah, I totally get what you mean. I think the right to reply is the biggest element of that, because there's a really good book called So You've Been Publicly Shamed. I think it's by John Ronson. I read it a while ago, and it's really good. It's all about the mob mentality and how online people can just start a rumor, and it can, and if you're a big enough person, it can just go like
and
wildfire.
The truth. It's always the dark side, isn't it, of all this stuff. It really is. It's an odd one to watch. But yeah, definitely.
It's worth a read. It's a good book. Okay, so when you become a touring act, do you have to run any gigs by you, for example, as a touring manager? And how do open spots work? And do you take a percentage of paid work that isn't to do with the tour? If, for example, you booked, say you booked someone into Manchester for two dates, mm-hmm. and there's one in the middle, and they have a spot in the middle they book themselves. Is that where does that come into for your role?
There's a few questions there.
Yeah.
But I'll try and break
I said
that
they were
down.
Quick fire.
No. I'll try and break that down. When people are on tour, generally you want them to be unlisted, really, for their circuit gigs, just because it cannibalizes the audience, especially if they're close to tour venues. So in that sense, try and be as strict as possible when you are booking things in, because we don't always look after their sort of live circuit diaries, just their tour diaries. But we will go over and make sure, please, you know, make sure this is unlisted, make sure this is under the radar. I mean, the way I would personally work, I wouldn't take a cut of any circuit work and things that they were doing at the same time, on the understanding that they wouldn't be listing it, obviously. Yeah. So that tends to be how that works. It's usually quite a separate situation, in my experience anyway. Yeah.
How would an act know if industry are talking about them in the early stages of that happening? Because obviously you guys are discussing it, I wouldn't say behind closed doors, but we're just not involved in those conversations, because you would be meeting up with, as we are meeting up as comedians, we don't tend to, maybe it's just me not being invited, but you know what I mean? It tends to be you guys are in one industry, we're in like sort of the other bit of it. Mm-hmm. How do we know that you're even, how would you find out that we're even talking about you in the early stages of that? Because it gets to a certain, you know, enough people are talking about you, you might ring us or email us and go,
sure. Yeah. Sure. I mean, that is a very hard one to quantify, I think. It is that sort of slightly intangible, almost PR level of, it's where things start to take off, really. I guess one of the ways to find anything out for certain is always to ask. But yeah, it may not be the most obvious thing.
Just email in, are you talking about me?
Yeah. Do you know who I am? Tick yes or no.
Do not email in that.
Gosh, that's an inbox. it is kind of intangible, and it does tend to turn, it starts out as whispers and then becomes, you know, a trickle, which then becomes, oh, you know, he's so hot right now, to quote Zoolander. So in terms of you knowing whether people are, I think, to be honest, you may not know either way, and that's always the terrifying thing when you're sort of putting yourself out there as a creative act, and I do understand and respect that, that you have to continue to be the best you can possibly be until these things become self-evident, really. I wish there was an easier way that I could explain that, really, that we could all have a big board where we post notes from the end of the day's conversation or something, you know, but that's probably the truth of it. Yeah
Like rate my teacher, rate my comedian.
Yeah. It's like, it's almost like a Tinder app, but just for like...
They're already all on Tinder, I can tell you that now. I think, you know, the whole it takes 10 years to make an overnight mm-hmm. success, I think because of the amount of people there are out there now, it might not just be 10, I think it's sort of got longer for people to break through, or it feels like it might be taking people.
It can be, there is, I mean, as yeah, it's, but then there's always I do always feel like the cream will rise. I feel like this comes back to the thing I keep saying over and over again, it is about quality and it is about the best show and the best act. What that means from year to year can be very different. You know, what good looks like can change with fashions and that sort of thing. So there is always an element of being, you know, in the right place at the right time, as there is with any sort of entertainment industry. I mean, I wish there was a way that wasn't true, but it is just the same. It is absolutely the same. I think that, a lot of becoming a good professional comedian does come from the sheer amount of time that you spend doing it. I don't think that there is a shortcut for stage time. I really don't. And you obviously have to have funny bones there, but earning your stripes is still something that needs to be done, I think.
Yeah, it's the Malcolm Gladwell 10,000 hours.
A certain degree. But yeah, it's interesting. I always think that the comedy industry is sort of evolving and changing. I feel like there's less circuit gigs out there at the moment, but then there's more touring acts, and it's just interesting to see which way the pendulum shifts from time to time.
Yeah, totally. And I mentioned briefly earlier, like X Factor and Britain's Got Talent and that kind of stuff. What are maybe not just the industry, what are your views on comedians that go on those? Is that career suicide, or is that actually something that you guys monitor, or...?
Personally, I'm not a huge fan of the program, but that's just my personal view. I think that it can be a canny move for people, definitely. I think because you're looking at mass exposure, like this is absolutely something that can break someone through to being a household name, which in a sense is that shortcut that you're looking between gigging around the country for years and years and years, and you know, absolutely smashing it in front of X million people, and your name being out there and you being known throughout the country, if not further. So it can be a canny move, I think. I think it would be a very canny move. But I think it's something that you want to think all the way through both sides, because for everything that makes your household name, there's always the other side of these sort of things as well. But same with any other way. Anyway, you can become a household name, I guess. Yeah,
there's a percentage of every audience you play to that won't like you.
Yeah.
Even when you're doing your own shows, I imagine, you know, enough people will bring their partners or family, friends or whatever. Enough people are not going to like you that if you do it in front of 4 million people, you have to accept that maybe 10,000 people hated you.
It's a life lesson, isn't it? You can't please all the people all the time. It's just the fact, isn't it?
Yeah, totally. And when you're looking at Edinburgh, what is your opinion on free shows versus paid?
I think it's really interesting the way the Free Fringe has started to develop over the last few years. I mean, obviously it's been there for a fair few years now, but I feel like it's come into its own in the last few years. I think it's quite nice that there's different spaces with different expectations. I think that's, again, I think it can only increase the creativity that sort of Edinburgh brings. I think it allows, you know, people to go and take chances. But it also kind of, you know, with there still being the sort of like the paid fringe thing where it feels a little bit, you know, where there's more variables being controlled, and that's, you know, you know that you'll be able to give your absolute best because, you know, there won't be a leak in the ceiling, that sort of thing. That's not to besmirch anyone else, but you know what I mean. So I think it's interesting. There's lots of different models that are emerging, and I think it definitely is adding to the sort of the creative fire, I think, that you can get out there.
Yeah. And do you, I don't want to say look down on or look up on, but do you perceive a free show differently to a paid show, or like it was?
I think, I guess I would be answering as a maybe more of a punter on this one, that I think you probably go with different expectations to different shows, okay. Definitely. I think you probably have, not a lower expectation, like, I think going into a free show, you're taking a punt, and all you're kind of investing is your time. Essentially, I mean, if you really don't like it, you can walk out putting no money in the bucket, although that is incredibly rude. I was thinking anyway, but, you know, it's sort of, so you probably have a different expectation there, whereas you have a different expectation going into a paid show, which then can be like really pleasantly kind of met and becomes more of an occasion and that sort of thing. I think that's true.
Okay. And we were talking before about your boat show, which you book, or you...
I do indeed, yes.
Yeah. And that's been going 10 years, did you say?
The Monday Club, which Christian set up, is 19 years old. But I've been working for the boat show for the last 10 years, so I've been there since we started doing all the weekends, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And how have you found, especially the London circuit, we'll call that, like, separate circuit?
It kind of is. It's its own thing. I definitely noticed in the last 10 years that it's the weekend gigs specifically, there's less of them. There is just less of them. When I was a student and I first moved to London for uni, I used to sit and read Time Out from page, you know, cover to cover, and look at all the comedy listings everywhere and try and work out where everyone was. And they just started to shrink and shrink. And obviously, sort of, it became a point where Time Out didn't list every single one of those things. So that's obviously separate. But I do think that, there was a sort of a bit of a contraction that happened. I guess it's about longevity, isn't it? keep yourself going.
Yeah.
But I think that's definitely got smaller in the last. I think that a lot of major towns would probably say the same thing. Maybe whether my experience started about 10 years ago, which was off the back of a big sort of boom, where I did feel it was sort of like there were just comedy clubs everywhere. There was every single day, every single sort of venue, there was a comedy club everywhere. So that's probably a natural contraction that happens off that.
Do you think people's habits are changing, so they're going out more in the week than the weekend for comedy? Or,
well, I think people's habits are changing in terms of as I say, the rise of the touring act. So people are watching, you know, they're maybe watching less comics but investing more time and money in them,
right?
And therefore, so, because I think a lot of people's first point of contact with comedy now is the TV, rather than taking a punt on, you know, a comedy club as a form of entertainment.
Okay.
But yeah, we'll see.
So the path to audiences, as it were, would be getting a spot on, say, the Apollo, just for picking stuff out of the air, picking the Apollo and getting that to be released maybe 3 months before your tour, so that someone who maybe like
stuff. That's what you try for. Definitely.
Okay, no, that's interesting.
That would be ideal, but obviously that won't happen for everyone. But that is, that's what you would sell.
Okay, that's it. And do you think that's just the way that London is now? Well, let's not say it's just London. That's just the way that people are, who are of a certain demographic, who work throughout the day. They just want to go home at the end of the day. They want to watch something a consistent. You know, they want the security and safety of not having to take a risk of going to a club and seeing eight acts that might be rubbish. They want someone that have been curated for them, and from the comfort of their own, maybe in their underwear, sat on the sofa. You know what I mean? Like, the whole thing's much more comfortable to them. Or do you think it's just a case of the clubs themselves are attracting a different audience to the people that maybe sit at home and watch TV?
Yeah, I'd say that actually, it's probably widened the audience of having things Apollo, that people that would maybe never have gone to a comedy club.
Okay.
Those people would then maybe go out and see, an act on tour, or you'd like to hope it worked the other way around. You'd like to hope that people see Apollo and go, oh, I think comedy's quite fun, and would maybe take a punt on a comedy club. I think that's true.
Yeah, but if I wasn't in comedy and I was watching the Apollo, I'd go, oh, cool, I wonder where I can get tickets to go to the Apollo.
Yeah.
I wouldn't go...
Yeah, that is true. That is very true. So I do think that there is a danger of people... And people love a TV name for all sorts of things, for regular gigs and for tours and things like that. So the challenge, I guess, for regular gigs, the challenge is to get people to trust your curation of it. That they trust that they may not have seen that person on telly, but they've been before and it was excellent. So they know that, this person is excellent,
How hard is it then to get your act onto something like the Apollo?
Again, that's not necessarily my side. That'll be Christian's side, essentially. Christian and Helena. They're better people to ask than me, essentially.
I will ask them to come on, don't worry.
Sure.
Well, I think that's pretty much going to be everything then, otherwise. Because we're only going to go into more specifics on... Well, I was going to ask sort of what you think more of... So, because obviously TV isn't... Like competitions aren't... It's not good for everyone. Like, not everyone's going to flourish in that environment.
Absolutely.
So how would you promote an act who you felt would not do as well on TV?
So you look at other ways of doing that, really. There's lots of ways that you can... It's about being creative and clever about things. There's other ways of reaching people through, again, we come back to things like content on social media and things like that, and just kind of working alongside, and having a great show to sell, something that's got a bit of an angle to it is always helpful, and you play up to that, essentially. I think it's without doing specifics or anything, because I don't want to give too much away. But so it's about being clever and creative about it. I think I think that's sort of one of our mottos as a company. It's never no is never our last answer, essentially.
Yeah. If you want to give like an example of something you've worked on that's already happened that you're really proud of, that was like a creative campaign that you...
Ooh, let's have a wee think. I'm trying to think of something that's not too obvious. I guess it's many, many years ago. It's a couple of years ago, and it's an Edinburgh thing rather than a tour thing. But we bought the Blanks, which is Ted's band from Scrubs.
Oh, I love
over.
The Blanks, sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, they're amazing.
So we brought those over to do Edinburgh in a 300-seater. And so it was an interesting creative mix of kind of using... Because obviously Scrubs had been sort of done for a while then. And it was... definitely one of those things of going, I kind of know what this is, but I don't. So it was about, they created a really fun online video that we kind of helped to go viral, and we kind of got everyone, lots of people in Edinburgh, sort of really psyched about this and doing the dance from the video. Got some well-placed kind of Radio 1 coverage and things like that, because it's not the sort of thing that you could sort of pop on telly so easily. So it was about... working with great PR, obviously, to get on some interesting places that we could publicise that. But good use of social media and and kind of really reinforcing it's these guys. And I mean, people were taking a real punt on that because it is sort of, you know, it's an a cappella show, which is a funny a cappella show, which is a little bit out of a lot of people's comfort zone. But yeah, it's all in the way that you put things together and sell it to people, I think.
I remember when I first saw them on Scrubs, they reminded me of the Hal's band in Malcolm in the Middle. And I remember sitting there thinking, I really hope this is not just another band for like a TV show or whatever. And so I googled them and I was like, they're real. So
yes, since they're at uni.
They're amazing. They're amazing. I'll link to them, guys, in the show notes. They're definitely worth checking out. They're annoyingly good. But yeah, so so when we're talking about social media, I don't know if you're, because this is the really interesting part, is that from I don't want to say from different perspective. Well, it is from different perspectives. So from my perspective as a performer, you sort of get a little bit more of an overview of what other performers are creating and putting up online than you probably do, because otherwise you just physically can't do your job as well.
Hours in the day, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So for example, do you know, if you don't know what this is, it's going to sound weird. Do you know Arseraptor on YouTube?
I know Arseraptor, yes.
So my friend runs that, right?
Oh, really? And, I've always wondered who it is.
Yeah, it's not me, by the way.
It's fine. No. I mean, like, don't worry, I'm not going to take anything down, but I've always wondered who it was because obviously they've got all the best clips.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. So we got in contact because I do a lot of stuff in social media and I said, he was having a lot of legal trouble because
I can understand.
So I'll quickly explain to anyone who doesn't actually know who Arseraptor is.
That sounds like we're doing some weird cult thing.
Arseraptor, if you go to YouTube and type in Arseraptor,
keep saying it.
Yeah, I know. Just see how many times I can say it, because then it loses all meaning and then it sounds like a normal thing. So anyway, if you go to YouTube and you type in Arseraptor, you'll find a YouTube account which is run by, I'm not going to say who because I don't want him getting inundated, but he's a guy I know who he basically uploads clips that he's ripped from Live at the Apollo or any sort of stand-up set that's occurred on TV and puts them up there for free for people who cannot watch them on the iPlayer or Channel 4 or whatever around the world, so that comedians get bigger audiences, essentially, and it means that people are more discoverable online. And he got into a lot of trouble legally with the BBC, for example, who, fair enough, they've got their own,
it's their,
you know,
copyright, yeah.
Yeah, and you can understand why they would be annoyed by it, but he was like, I feel like I'm doing the comedians a favor here. I'm not getting paid for this. None of these ones have got adverts on them. And the ones that do adverts on are not ones I've enabled. I don't get paid for this or anything. I'm just trying to do it because I love comedy. And I wondered what your thoughts were on people doing stuff like that, because comedians are split between, I don't like my material going up online like that because then I have to burn it. But then if you've done it on TV anyway, how much are you going to have to burn it anyway? And
to a certain degree, I mean, I guess this is a sort of, these are my views and not necessarily the views of CKP, because it's one of those things. I've always sort of thought, as you say, with TV stuff, generally speaking, you kind of need to put it to one side once it's done. That's just generally the way that it goes. And I think there's definitely something that could be said for having those things online and available. They can actually increase. I'm sure I read something about Monty Python stopped taking down all of their sort of clips, and then they saw their DVD sales spike, essentially. Because it keeps you in people's minds and stuff like that. So personally, I think, I don't know, if you've done it for TV, then it's sort of, it's definitely not in the public domain, because that's what copyright's for. But so public domain is the wrong word, but it's definitely out there already. I think that people get very upset if you record them in a live way, rightly so. People get very annoyed being filmed in a live I can totally agree with that. Also, because it's a personal bugbear of people not experiencing live events and watching it through a feckin' iPhone, essentially.
No, I understand that. No, I mean, like I was telling you before, I've written this book, and it's called How to Make a Living by Working for Free. And it's all about creating a relationship with an audience through free content that you've shared online. So, because I firmly believe that performers in particular are not just performers anymore. They should be cultivating communities, not just audiences, because it should be a two-way street between you and the audience you're dealing with, because, you know, otherwise there's nothing to latch onto, because there's too many of us right now. You need to not stand for something, but you need to have something that means they can want to talk to you and want to talk about you as well. And I think he's doing a great job, and I'm for it if he can find a way around it legally. I should point that out. I mean, like, I'm not...
Yeah, I mean, yeah. At the end of the day, copyright is copyright, and that's what people... Yeah, I think it's that needs to be respected.
Because that's how
a lot of artists make livings, and that's how the companies that make the livings for the other artists, that's how they do that. But I definitely think it's... If you take aside the copyright issue, which is kind of impossible to do so.
you put aside law.
there's a lot of people that do put their own content online. A lot of acts do that, as you say. So I think that's definitely a model, definitely a model.
Mm. What is the best bit of advice you've ever been given?
Ooh, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. Ooh, that sounds quite profound, doesn't it?
Do you want me to ask something else and come back to it?
Yeah, come back to that.
Okay.
I'll think of something good, because I don't want to say anything that's a bit like, yeah.
Okay. This is one of my favourite questions to ask, and I'm sorry that we might have to come back to this one as well.
Sure.
What is the thing that you do that no one really gets to see that you sort of think, this is the thing that like makes my job so getting up for in the morning, like this is the exciting part of my day and of a tour, maybe of organizing a tour?
I love loads of things about my job.
But it's got to be the thing that no one really gets to see.
Yeah. The satisfaction of a completed tour sheet. So I have a tour sheet that runs from the very start of working with someone and to the final settlement, and it will contain every pencil and every blah 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 and all the incomings and outgoings and everything that's been involved in it, and then it's lovely. There's a sort of it can be a huge project. Mm. So it's lovely kind of seeing it reach completion. Definitely.
Yeah, I'm a bit of a spreadsheet nerd as well. Yeah. So it's fine. Okay, and what is the best bit of advice you have for someone who has a show? Let's split it. For someone who has a show who wants to get a tour manager to help them, mm-hmm. and someone who has a show who wants to do it on their own.
I think in terms of getting people to help you with your tour, I think that's start approaching people, really. Look at who you admire and look who they work with. Go to them or see if there's anyone that could give you recommendations, people that you think so it's always a good one to think, you know, what does good look like for you? So that's a good place to start, really. What's your best outcome and how do you start working towards achieving that, essentially? And in terms of doing it yourself, I think it is don't be paralyzed by fear, probably, because there are lots of risks to be taken, and all you can do is try and play the odds the best you can and trial and error and all that sort of thing. Yeah.
Mm. Okay. And what is the best bit of advice you've ever been given?
I think if you can do something a tiny bit better the next day than you did yesterday, then you're moving in the right direction.
Oh, I like that. That's cool. Because that's like such an incremental thing that it's...
Yeah, I think it's really important to remember. And that's the same with any big project or anything that works with big projects. It can seem gargantuan and huge. And it really is about breaking things down into tiny little bits and just doing the best you can every single day. If there's any way to, again, that phrase, nudge the needle. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for coming on.
Oh, thanks very much, Simon.
That was Ali. I love chatting to her. She's so full of life and lovely and just knows so much. And I really wish I had more time to talk to her, to be honest with you. She was great and I hope you got a lot out of it. If you are looking at going to Edinburgh, I'm not sure if CKP are still looking, but give them a message. All the links are in the show notes. They're absolutely lovely to chat to and work with, and I really enjoyed having them on. If you need any help with Edinburgh, on my website, simonkane.co.uk/indie-guides, there's a guide to putting together your show. There's also a guide to making a press release, which has all the tips and advice that I've got from different PRs and journalists that I've had on this show, as well as ones that I haven't, but have given me the information to share with you. And it's all up there for free. Also, there's a list of PR and marketing people on simonkane.co.uk/RCIndustryPodcast, which would give you a load of interviews of other PRs and people who will be able to help you advertise your show. Basically, loads of good stuff on my website. Also on my website, you can find information about my show in Bath. I'm doing the Bath Comedy Festival on Sunday the 10th of April at 3 p.m. at the Bath Brewhouse. So if you can come down to that, that'd be great. It's free entry, or you can reserve yourself a £5 ticket online, and you can find all the details of that over on my website or on the Bath Fringe website. That'd be amazing. If you would like to support the podcast in any other way, please do join the Facebook group. You can find it by typing RC Industry podcast into Facebook and join it there. It's the best place to find out about future guests. We've got some great people coming on. You could also ask your questions exclusively to future guests there, and that's pretty much the only place you can get it done, because it's easier for me if it's all centralized in one place. So thank you for doing that. Thank you for joining. Also, if you're enjoying the podcast and you think this episode and the ones you've listened to are worth 80p, or $1 is the equivalent, please consider becoming a Patreon. I would really, really love to get us up to the next target on our Patreon. I think it would take about 50 of you to each donate $1 per episode to get us up to $100, which is amazing. It would really help me out with budgets and future shows and just covering my time and costs for the admin of this show. So if you are enjoying it, I'm not asking for loads of money. Just $1 would be absolutely amazing. If you listen this far, I can only assume that you're a big fan of the show and you don't mind me pleading you for money. So please do that. That would really help out and support the future of the show. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for supporting. Thank you very much for coming to see me in Bath, if you do, maybe. See you in about 10 days' time. Bye!
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.